Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Every week at this time, bringing you the big conversation, bringing you the great debate. But it can only be a debate if you join in. And there's plenty to debate this evening. The telephone number is 44208-601-4555. Or you can SMS the show on 4478-0000-8066. Or you can email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. Well, the armed forces of the royal dictatorship in the tiny state of Bahrain have gone on a murderous rampage. In the middle of the night, they killed several peaceful demonstrators, wounded hundreds of others, and more than 60 have disappeared, either in the dungeons of the torturers of Bahrain, against whom I've been campaigning for more than 20 years, or, even worse, into the graveyards, as yet unknown. In Yemen, the dictator for more than 30 years, Ali Abdullah Saleh, is murdering people in the street in order to try and prolong his term of office. And the quixotic dictatorship of Colonel Gaddafi in Libya is doing exactly the same thing. Reports from Benghazi and other towns in that region suggest that some large number of people have been shot and wounded. Some will say that the use of the word murder is reckless, although actually, as we're applying it to Arab dictatorships, probably no one in authority will have the nerve to complain about it. But I say when peaceful, unarmed demonstrators are gunned down in the street for demanding the kind of freedoms that we ourselves enjoy, we have a responsibility to call it what it is. In Egypt, of course, the revolution continues. Strikes and pressure from below are mounting and are going to have to mount if the dictatorship change of regime is going to mean a real change of the dictatorship. Tomorrow, after Friday prayers, there will be another mass rally in Tahrir Square, and so there must be, and every Friday, if you ask me, if this revolution is not going to be aborted. It's not going to be half a revolution. And as the French revolutionary Saint-Just said, those who half make a revolution are digging their own graves. And Ehud Barak, the Israeli defense minister, has just threatened to invade and occupy Lebanon. So, as you can tell, there's lots happening across the Arab world. As always, let me make it clear, these are my own personal views. They're not the views of Press TV, decidedly not the views of the government of Iran. And if you have a different point of view, we especially want to hear from you. I promise you, your call, your text, your email will be prioritized. And if nobody phones up with a different point of view, well, you're going to force me to have to put that different point of view. Let's go to the callers. First on the line from the United States is Chris on Bahrain and Egypt. Chris, welcome to the show, my friend.
Good evening, Mr. Gowdy. Hope you're doing well.
Yes, very well. Go ahead, sir.
All right, sir. I've been waiting for this for a very long time to finally see the dissolution of the quote-unquote vassal states of the United States in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a false political situation for going on 40 or 50 years now.
Yes.
And what they have actually done is they have been promoting people who actually do not follow the ideals of the quote-unquote Constitution of the United States in order to have a very
puppet,
convenient
puppet regimes.
Party. Yeah, they're thugs. They're despots, for lack of a better word. And this is not what the United States stands for. And it's a marriage of political convenience in order to support the Zionist state of Israel and gain control of all the Middle Eastern oil, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Chris, you say it's not what the United States stands for. And on paper, of course, you're right. The U.S. Constitution says that all men are created equal and all have the right to seek liberty and happiness. But in fact, for the last 60 years, this is exactly what the United States has
absolutely
stood
true
for. In Korea, in Vietnam, in Africa, in the Arab Middle East, in the great Persia, where they propped up this tyrant, the Shah, for decades and opposed the Iranian people's revolution. This is exactly what the United States has stood for, I'm sorry to say.
And the problem here is that it's all been so they can gain world power instead of standing up for the people of the world. All they're doing is standing up for special interests and the quote-unquote old boys network and power mongering and, of course, energy and lots of money. I mean, Hosni Mubarak has $70 billion.
Yes, where is that $70 billion? Some of it must be in your country. Some of it must be in my country. How come nobody was suspicious about the president of the republic building up a fortune of $70 million? Unbelievable.
It's all dirty politics, George. You know that, and I know that.
Yeah.
The only way, you know, I hate to put it this way, but the simple solution is for the people of the Middle East to keep doing what they're doing, for the people of the Middle East to stand up for themselves and remove these despots, these dictators, and these oppressive regimes, and to kick the United States out.
Well, only,
Chris,
you're absolutely right. All these people are doing is what the American people themselves did, rising
exactly.
up in a revolution against
exactly.
despotism, rising
exactly.
up on the principle that there should be no taxation without representation. The
absolutely
people of
true.
These Arab countries have no votes, no rights, no representation at all. Chris, it's been great to talk to you. Thanks very much. Chris, in the United States, let's talk to Leander in Epsom, in England, about
Hello,
Tunisia, a revolution which continues. Leander, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I've been meaning to phone you many times.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
But what I wanted to tell you about Tunisia, I lived there for 10 years, and I think it's the most corrupt place you could ever imagine.
Well, it was under the dictatorship, that's for sure. Let's
but
hope
you know,
it has a better
you know,
future.
It's still going on now. I'm in contact with Tunisia every day with my friends in Sousse.
Oh, yes.
The people just go in and kill students. 2 days ago, three students were killed.
The revolution isn't over, Leander. You're right. The struggle continues. But the great opposition leader, Sheikh Ghannouchi, he's back there now. And his movement is turning itself into a political party. There will be, I believe, free and fair elections in Tunisia. I'm sure that his party will emerge as the biggest, and that with their allies, we can have a new, clean, democratic government in control of Tunisia.
George, I don't think it's going to happen.
No?
America will not allow to have any
Look,
Arab country
listen,
freedom.
Listen, Leander, the days are gone when what America will or will not allow is what matters. This is a paper tiger. This is a paper tiger, the United States. If the people rise up, stand up, then believe me, that paper tiger will be able to do nothing except accommodate itself to the new realities. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to London. Talk to William on Bahrain and Egypt. William, welcome to the show.
Well, we've all seen such amazing things in the last few weeks.
It's unbelievable, William. You know, it's just 2 months since that young boy, Abu Aziz, set himself alight in Tunisia and began this chain reaction.
Yes, and I think, I still think that because things have moved so quickly, there hasn't been enough time, really, to celebrate the deaths of those who died as martyrs in Egypt. Because you've got to consider, these people who were demonstrating knew that if they were confronted with the secret police would fire on them, had already fired on them. Now, people who go on a march, you know, when I was a child, people who used to go on a march to Aldermaston, they wouldn't expect the police to shoot at you when you get there. Yet the people in Tahrir Square knew that the entire security apparatus of the Egyptian regime, with the exception of the army to some degree, but all the unofficial and the secret police were there to actually target them, would have hunted them down like dogs and put them in, tortured them. And it was a question in the end of them or us, you know, by standing as they did in Tahrir Square, particularly on that night when there was only 2,000 of them. Yet they stood up against everything Mubarak could throw at them, and they died for freedom of association. for basic rights. These people were fighting not only for Egypt, not only for the Arab world. They were fighting for the whole of the world. You know, this is the most amazing and glorious revolution
that we've had for many years. This has been the most amazing and glorious telephone call. William, I hope it's not long before you ring me back, because that perfectly, succinctly summed up the situation brilliantly. Thanks very much indeed for that. Just to buttress your point that not everything by any means is finished in Egypt, there is a report this evening that some of those missing, some of those in the dungeons, are being tortured, and not by the secret police, but by the Egyptian military. So let's have no illusions. And let me tell you something else, a small matter, but just for your information. On Monday of this week, I informed the Egyptian embassy in London that I was about to fly to Cairo, having been a year before declared persona non grata and banned from the country. The embassy went into a state of panic and informed me hours later, many calls and emails later, that I was still banned from Egypt and that if I flew there, then I risked arrest on my arrival. I've told them, and I tell them again now in public, I have no fear of your arrest, and I am going to fly to Cairo, and very soon. And the regime in Cairo will have to make up its mind whether it wants to arrest me or whether it wants to allow me in and across their territory to visit the Palestinian people in Gaza, as is my right as a 35-year fighter for Palestinian rights. William, thank you. Let's stay in London. Talk to Ismail about the Arab Revolution. Ismail, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, George. How are you?
Alaikum salam.
Are you okay?
Yes, very, very happy.
Yes. Thanks for talking to me, George. Just want to say I was one of the individuals on the first convoy with you to Palestine.
Excellent.
When we went with Viva Palestina.
Excellent.
In 2009.
Yeah.
And as you are, of all people, well know how the Tunisians treated us, the convoy members.
Very badly. Ismail, I've said many times that of all the regimes, even the Egyptian, the Tunisian regime was the worst of all the countries through which we passed.
Absolutely. And this is it. And it was a matter of only time that the people of Egypt realized that this was going to happen. And it happened more quicker and more sooner than I thought. And it's only now, I mean, I'm disgusted at the Arab League, that they call themselves the League and they fight for the interests of their people. Yet, you see, as soon as the Western influences...
It's more a fourth division league, Ismail. It's more a sort of a Vauxhall Conference League, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've followed your work right the way through and, you know, your struggle for the Palestinian people. Let's just only hope that this is the beginning of the end for all Western powers and certainly the Israelis having an influence on Egypt once a democratic election happens, that the walls of Egypt fall between Rafah and Gaza. And
thanks very much, Ismail. First class, fantastic. Great to hear from you again. Of course, one assumes that Israel has no fear of democracy in the Arab world. After all, they were forever telling us they were the only democracy in the Middle East. Well, they should be happy because more and more and more democracies are going to be born in the Middle East. Let's stay in London. Talk to Liz on the subject of the leaders who are allowed to leave with their billions. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello, George.
Nice to hear from you. Go ahead.
Just to say, you are a brave man. That's the first thing.
Thank you.
Because you are able to say things which everybody wants to keep quiet.
I'm not afraid of them.
And
I'm afraid only from God.
And I can assure you it's not just me, but lots admire you. Now, I need to say, you mentioned the word murder. And when you mentioned the word murder, the only thing that came to mind was something that has happened in the past. But anyway, let's start with the revolutions. Now, I felt that the Egyptian president should be allowed to go with some dignity. And I do feel that the other dictators, whoever they are, there are lots of them in the Middle East, should also be able to go with some dignity. Now, I do believe they should be overthrown, yes, but with some dignity. However, The reason why I'm saying all this is that you mentioned the word murder. And with murder, the only person who came into my mind was Tony Blair, our son Tony Blair. Now, look, he has done atrocities in Iraq, mostly, and he's been able to get away with it. So why can't everybody else, born and unborn, who's going to do atrocities, be able to get away with it?
Well, none of them should be allowed to get away with it, Liz. You and I have had this disagreement before. But I'm not a person, for example, who believes in capital punishment. So I'm not calling for the execution, even of the executioners. But I'll tell you this. Egypt is a poor country. 50%, that's 40 million people in Egypt, are living on less than $2 a day. $2 a day, Liz. This means they don't even know if they'll have tea, sugar, and bread to eat and drink tomorrow. That's all, if they're lucky, that they will have. Mubarak and his children have, according to many sources, most importantly Forbes magazine, which charts billionaires around the world, says that the Mubarak family stole $70 million from the poor people of Egypt. I'm sorry, there is no dignity in theft. Let's stay in London, talk to Falim on Bahrain. He disagrees with me, so his call's even more valuable. Falim, welcome.
Welcome, George, and thanks to Press TV for giving me the opportunity to come back again this week. I spoke to you last week.
Welcome, sir. Go ahead.
Welcome. Yeah, what it is, I don't really have much of a disagreement. What it is in I think there's a slightly double policy, yeah, on behalf of, not yourself, but us in America, yeah? On one hand, Hillary Clinton was saying, you know, how the people of Egypt bravely rose up and the authorities there respected their decision and done everything. I don't know if she had the TV off 18 days, and she was linking it to Iran. She's saying how the police brutality and everything, yeah? Now, we know in Egypt what really happened is the security forces, numbering 1 million, put on plain clothes and appeared to be pro-government protesters. Well, if you put it in Iran and you put the pro-government protesters on the street, they'd be swamped. The anti-government protesters would be swamped. They're probably not even 1%. And then the way they make it sound as if there's a real revolution coming on in Iran and, you know, where the people want a popular uprising, I totally disagree with that. And regarding Egypt, I fear that, yes, they have toppled the president, but I fear that a true revolution in Egypt, because of its border with Israel, a true revolution in Egypt would mean, you know, ultimately having to face up to the military. And like you pointed out, that these reports of torture, and it's not just today. I've been reading this all through the protests, and afterwards as well, there's reports of people going missing, people.
Well, look, Falim, there's actually no disagreement between. I'm cutting you short only because there's so many people trying to get through. But if you look on YouTube at my speech on, I think, the 2nd of February in Red Lion Square in Conway Hall on Egypt, you'll see that I warned against the any trust, any illusions in the character of the top military brass in Egypt. I don't accept at all that top military brass is in the interests of the people. They're in the interests of those who pay them. Secondly, I don't believe there is going to be a revolution in Iran. There's already been a revolution in Iran. 32 years ago, there was a revolution in Iran, and the great majority of Iranians support that revolution. They may not, in the same number, support this politician or that politician inside the Islamic Republic of Iran. As far as I know, when I was there and talking to people there, quite openly, by the way, on their part and on mine, there's quite a healthy plurality of opinion about this politician or that politician. But in Iran, there is overwhelming support for the system of the Islamic Republic. There are people, of course, who have access to international media and who are well familiar with the ways of YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and all the rest of it, who can make a noise which is disproportionate to the actual social weight that they have in the country, which is not to say that what they're saying is illegitimate or to say that they're foreign agents. I don't believe that they are foreign agents, though there are foreign agents who are very busy in Iran. You can be sure about that. Not the least of them, agents of Great Britain from London, which has a long and inglorious history of subversion in Iran, and played a decisive role in the overthrow of the democratically elected Prime Minister Mossadegh. Let's go to Germany, talk to AJ on Bahrain. Go ahead, AJ, welcome to the show.
Hi, George.
Yes, welcome, sir, go ahead.
No, nice to talk to you, George. I say, this is a nature call. Nature is calling. This is a time for the less privileged, the poor, to stand up for what nature has offered us to be. I say the West, they are the people causing this problem. The colonial masters, the France, the English, the American, the all of them. George, listen to this. Accountability, democracy. How do you say it? These systems, they taught us. They knew everything. They knew the leaders who are stealing. This revolution will continue.
AJ, you know, it's good that you mentioned that, because you're not far away from Switzerland being in Germany.
Yes.
I see that the Swiss banks have frozen the assets of the Mubarak dynasty held in Switzerland, which may, as I've said, run into tens of billions of dollars. But they were quite happy to bank those tens of billions of dollars,
George,
in the name of the dynasty until the dynasty fell. It's unbelievable. AJ in Germany, thank you. Let's talk to Bulbul in Northampton in England. Bulbul, go ahead.
Hello, George Galloway.
Nice to hear from you, sir. Go ahead.
It's very good to know that you're keeping up the spirit.
Oh, I'm very spirited tonight, believe me.
Well, I wanted to talk about Yemen.
Yes.
Knowing that Ali Abdullah Saleh has been there for quite some time.
Yes, he's been there for 32 years.
Yes.
And al-Gaddafi has been there for 43 years.
Yes.
More, that's more 75 years between them.
Yes. To be specific on Yemen, I think Ali Abdullah Saleh should read from the lines that it is time for him to go.
Yes.
Because for the 32 years that he has been in power, he has done nothing for the country and has just been eating from the country and taking away
It's the poorest country in the world, according to the BBC today.
Yes, that is very terrible.
And shameful. Shameful.
I think all countries in the Arab League should learn from what has happened in Tunisia and Egypt, and should now try and be open. It is time for them to practice democracy. That's all.
Well said. Brilliant. Tony in London. Let's quickly squeeze him in before the break on U.S. policy. Tony, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hello, George. Nice speaking to you as usual.
Go ahead.
Yep, George, without doubt, everyone see the writing is on the wall now for the U.S. Zionist policies and the autocratic Arab family dynasties. The game is over, just like we saw in South Africa, or Nero, Emperor Nero in Rome. When Rome was burning, he didn't want to accept the fact. Same thing South Africa. When they were warned, no, they pride themselves on their military might, but that came to an end. All I have to say, America, wake up, do not follow your government's misguided policy favoring Israel, Zionist Israel all the time, and of course these Arab family dynasties mislead you. Time has come to think, and think hard, America. Don't let your coffers, you know, give in.
Well, Tony, it's not even their coffers. It's the coffers of a very few in the United States. The vast majority of the people of the United States, the 9% who are unemployed, the millions in the prison system, those having their houses repossessed, those sleeping on the streets, those struggling to make ends meet in the United States, they have nothing to gain from this U.S. policy of propping up tyrants across the world, and especially in the Muslim world. I'll be back after the news in just a few minutes' time with the second half of Comment. We're talking about the revolution which is rolling out across the Arab world from Marrakesh to Bahrain. I promise you, you don't want to miss it. Come back right after the news.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway. I'm here every week on Press TV bringing you the great debate, and it's a great debate this evening. We need your calls, your texts, your emails. Let's go all the way to Russia, talk to Mohammed about the Middle East. Mohammed, welcome to the show. We don't get many callers from Russia. Let's keep that up. Go ahead.
You're my hero.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Okay, I have a question regarding the Middle East. The thing is that Israel has always claimed that they are the only democracy in the Middle East.
Yes.
But their leaders are against the democracy in the Middle East. Like recently, one of the Israeli ministers was speaking about it.
Yes.
So
yes.
My question is, in that case, is there any possibility of this so-called preemptive strike on the Middle East by Israel if
no.
they become a democratic...
No, Mohammed, there really isn't. And you know what, brother? We have to shake ourselves from this anxiety that our adversaries are some kind of a superpower who can, either behind the scenes or in front of the scenes, make this or that happen or this or that not happen. Our destiny is in our own hands. As the great Irish revolutionary Jim Larkin said, the great only appear to be great as long as the rest of us are on our knees. Well, in the Middle East today, the people are up off their knees. And Israel does not have enough weapons in its armory. It does not have the capability of stopping this great tide of democracy which is sweeping the area. And why should they want to? As I said, they're forever telling us that they are the only democracy in the Middle East and that therefore we should support them. Well, of course they are a democracy for Jewish citizens, first and foremost, of the state that they call Israel. Second-class citizens within the state are those that they contemptuously call Arab Israelis. But of course, if you are one of the millions of Palestinians who have been living under occupation and siege at the feet of Israel, well, of course, it's no democracy at all. And when you do get a vote, if you vote the wrong way, well, you'll be sanctioned, besieged, and killed in large numbers just to punish you for how you cast that vote. Let's go to Siraj in London on Bahrain, which is a subject I'm paying very close attention to. Siraj, welcome to the show, my friend.
Salam alaikum, brother.
Alaikum salam.
Brother, I would like to tell you about the Bahraini soldiers who shot at 600 people, injuring them and sending them all to hospital.
Yeah.
That's a violent attack throughout the whole revolution. Not one country stepped up and done the exact same thing as they done to the Bahraini people.
Actually, the Bahraini demonstrators didn't even throw a stone. It was an entirely peaceful demonstration. The women and children were there in that camp. And in the middle of the night, these people came with knives and swords and live rounds. And they killed three. They wounded hundreds. And there's nearly 100 missing, who may also be dead. It is a very, very brutal crime. And I'm just waiting for the Western leaders to ring out their condemnation as clearly as they might in other circumstances. What about you, Siraj?
Brother, I would just like to tell you that I've organized a protest outside the Bahraini embassy this Saturday, the 19th, with Stop the War Coalition, and I would like you to be there to give a speech.
Well, I'll be there in spirit, Siraj, but I'll actually be on a plane to the Middle East at that time. But thanks for bringing it to my attention, and I'm sorry that I can't be there. Now, a place that has its own political crisis at the moment, though thankfully there's no one being shot down in the street, at least not yet, is the Emerald Isle, the Irish Republic, from where Anne will speak to us via the internet on Bahrain. Anne, very welcome indeed to the show. Tell us, how are these events going down in Ireland? Are Ireland's own problems swamping the news coverage of these events?
Hello, George. I'd like to comment on the Middle East and leave Ireland out of it for the moment.
Okay.
I lived for 17 years in the Middle East, and I was a young stewardess with Iran Air based in Tehran when the revolution was brewing under the reign of the Shah. There was a simmering resentment, but when you have no freedom of speech, as you have in most of these countries, and where you'll be tortured for your for speaking out. People are afraid to speak out. It's hard to hear what's going on unless you're trusted. And I was trusted in Iran. I saw the body of a man who had been tortured, and it has remained with me all my life. And that's the reason I've become a human rights activist, having witnessed firsthand such torture. America is reaping now the benefits of the policy they have pursued in the Middle East for all these years. The puppets that are what they call their strongmen, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, all these countries. Mubarak is gone, but he was one of them. The Al Saud in Saudi Arabia, the leader in Yemen, in Bahrain. So Bahrain and what we're seeing today is as a result of American military intervention. The Saudis sent troops to Bahrain to shoot and crush this revolution. Saudi Arabia is obviously very worried, George, because they built a causeway in the 80s, and I was on the private jet that took some of the people, in fact, the Bin Laden family, to Bahrain, in Saudi, to the Saudi side of the causeway for the opening of that causeway. You can actually drive across from Saudi Arabia with your car into Bahrain. That's how close this revolution is coming to Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is the linchpin of American politics, apart from Israel. Israel has no common interest with America. In actual fact, Israel's policy, if you could call murdering and genocide a policy, Israel's policy in the Middle East makes America hated throughout the world.
Well, do you know what, Anna? I literally could not have put all of that better myself, and I'm really grateful to you for doing it. I would just add one thing and take your comment on it. It is obviously the tactic of the dictatorship in Bahrain to paint this as a sectarian question, Sunni versus Shia. But in fact, all the Bahrainis, except the privileged few, Sunni and Shia, are oppressed by the royal dictatorship there in that tiny statelet, don't you think?
Absolutely. And sweeping the whole thing about oppression and keeping people down with American-made torture equipment, American-made tear gas, and never letting them have freedom of speech, this is something that is a real big problem in that part of the world. There is nothing to do with the religion. Shia and Sunni are both Muslim. Okay, they are like the Catholics and the Church of Ireland or Church of England. It's a little difference. They can get along very well. But the West loves to create this Islamophobia that is seen sweeping our media at the moment.
Well, divide and rule, Anna, is the tactic of empire down the ages. Thanks for a truly fantastic call. I really appreciate that very much. Indeed. Now, Anna made some scathing comments about the state that they call Israel. These were her comments. They were not mine. They're not Press TV's. If you're a supporter of Israel and you wish to counter those points, then your call will come immediately onto the air. I beg you, if you feel that way, please call us. Let's talk to Mohammed in Oxford on Bahrain and Egypt. Mohammed, welcome to the show. Hello, Mohammed.
Good evening, George.
Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Let me pay you a small tribute to you, sir.
Thank
you. George, you are Salahuddin Ayyubi of modern times.
Thank you so much. That's very kind of you.
To all the oppressed, not only the Muslims, but all the mankind of Khalifa Ali, the famous saying, it is a victim who gives birth to cruel dictators. Stop being the victims, then the dark forces will evaporate like a cloud in the sky. We have lots of work to do yet.
We do.
The Middle East, the Central Asia needs to be liberated. I salute you, sir. You are the Lion of Scotland. Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, wow. I'm slightly overcome by that, Mohammed. Thank you very much indeed for your very, very kind words. Arthur is in Great Britain. He wants to talk about the Middle East. Let's hear what he has to say. Arthur, welcome to the show, my friend.
George, good evening to you.
And you, sir.
I'm sorry, before my question, a quick rant.
Go ahead.
Watching on TV the governments of Americans' allies in the Middle East killing their own people should open the eyes of all thinking people who yes. have doubts about the American policy in the region.
Yes.
But for me, George, and this is continuing my rant, the greater injustice is the plight of the Palestinians and the people of Gaza in particular. Not only have they effectively lost their country, but Israel continues to deny their basic rights and continues to use the so-called peace process negotiations as a fig leaf which they manipulate in order to legitimize their actions. And George, is not Israel in breach of UN resolutions and the International Court in respect of its continued occupation? Washington would be vociferous if the culprit were Iran. So, George, here's my question. Will we ever see US policy for Palestine change? And will it ever be independent of the powerful and rich Jewish lobby?
Well, it's not a Jewish lobby. This is a point that I keep making, Arthur. The vast majority of the supporters of Israel in the United States are not Jewish. And many Jews in the United States support the campaign for justice for the Palestinians. Many Jews in the United States are amongst the most progressive people in the country. The backbone of the pro-Israel lobby in the United States is fundamentalist, fanatic, evangelical Christian. More than 60 million Americans are members of these evangelical fanatic churches whose article of faith is to support Israel through thick and thin, whatever it does. So we really should never fall into this trap of calling it a Jewish lobby, for it is not true. But to answer the first point of your question, Arthur, I believe we will see it. Indeed, I believe we're already beginning to see it. When General Petraeus told the Senate Armed Services Committee that America's relationship with Israel was becoming a strategic liability to the country, he was telling the truth, which is why he didn't suffer the kind of uproar that he might have done in previous eras. Even though he's a very powerful military officer, no one could criticize what he said because it was undeniably true. Now, I have been crisscrossing the United States speaking on this subject over the last few years. I've spoken more than 50 times in the United States, and I'm going back there again next month, as I am indeed, God willing, to Canada. Two meetings in Canada, in Calgary, in Alberta, and in Windsor, in the south of Canada, the southeast of Canada, and then in New York City itself. And I'm doing that because I want to change the paradigm in the United States, in the interests of the people of the United States, apart from any others. Assad is also in the UK. He wants to talk about the revolution. Assad, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Alaikum salam. Go ahead, sir.
George, first let me congratulate you for having the courage to speak the truth, and I hope God gives you a long life and more courage to carry on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Now, a couple of things I just wanted to say is that one, if the Muslim world is listening today to this program and whoever is listening, two things. Point number one, these people must not give up the revolution because the military generals in Egypt are still paid by the U.S. and they will try to keep the same kind of system going on. So it's not over yet. And I hope this thing keeps on spreading throughout the Middle East, including Pakistan and Iran, wherever people need a voice. And the second thing is a message to all these so-called Arab leaders. They need to learn a lesson that when Mubarak was serving the West's purpose, they were all friends with him. The minute they saw him going, they've changed their minds, and now he's a bad man. So that proves that the West, especially the United States, they are nobody's friend. And as far as
that's right, Assad, they have no friends, only interests. Now, I've got to take the next call because it's from Bahrain. It's from Ali in Bahrain. Ali, you're especially welcome to the show. Our hearts and our prayers are with the people of Bahrain this evening.
Hi, can you...
Yes, Ali. Can you hear me?
Yes, it's a bit of a bad line, but just to say, But I've been a fan of yours for quite a number of years.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, on this occasion, I'm afraid you're wrong on some of the points that you're making there on TV.
Okay.
I live here in Bahrain. I know what Bahrain is like. And anybody who lives in Bahrain or has lived in Bahrain before, they know that people of Bahrain have the most freedom in any of the Middle Eastern countries, Gulf countries. And we have a free press. People are pretty much allowed to practice their religion more so than they're even allowed to practice in the UK. I'll give you an example, quick example of that. I know we're very short of time and I have lots of points to make and I want to see what you have to say to them as well.
Sure.
The one main point I want to make is that they have such a, especially the Shia community in Bahrain, have such a freedom of expression here that they're free to practice the religion as and when they want. They get free, government holidays or Shia holidays. In Muharram, they're allowed to practice the religion completely, openly and freely. Some of the things that they do in Muharram, like beating themselves, blood on the street, cutting themselves up, these kind of demonstrations, organizations would never be allowed in the UK because it'd be seen as too violent. So on that aspect, Bahrain is more democratic even than the UK itself. Now going to the actual, the demonstrations themselves, it's absolutely wrong and incorrect for anybody to say that these demonstrations are united people, both Shia and Sunnah. You will not find a single person in the demonstrations against the king or against the government. You will not find a single Sunni person. Every single one of them is a Shia person in there. And as you can see from the reports of people who have been injured in the clashes, unfortunately been injured in these clashes, you will see from the hospital reports that every person was a Shia person that was injured. It cannot be that the police, before they fired the tear gas or went in and asked each person, are you a Sunni, and they let him go, and then are you a Shia, and then they attacked him. No, because there wasn't a single Sunni person there demonstrating.
Well, let me stop you, because you made a lot of very tendentious points, and I want to test them. First of all, I'm not sure how you know from looking at someone in a hospital that they're Shia. This suggests an antenna for sectarian difference, which is truly remarkable. But I need to ask you, if Bahrain is this paradise of democracy, why are tens of thousands of people risking their lives demonstrating against the regime? Number two, why did the forces of the regime kill and wound hundreds of them in the middle of the night last night, if they are the forces of such a democratic country?
Let me just answer both of your points there. Firstly, there's not tens of thousands of people. Firstly, there's not tens of thousands of people demonstrating. Most of the people that were there in the square were about 1,000 to 2,000 demonstrators from a hardcore Shia community.
How did you know that they're all Shia, by the way?
Sorry?
How do you know that the tens of thousands, the BBC's figure, not mine, tens of thousands who have been demonstrating, how do you, Ali, how do you know that they're all Shia?
Because I am on the ground, unlike somebody else sitting there.
But you cannot possibly know the religious confession of tens of thousands of people. You are yourself displaying the very sectarianism that you're accusing others of. Now deal with my two substantive points. Why are the people demonstrating, and why is the regime shooting them?
George, if you give me a chance to answer those points. Firstly, there's not tens of thousands of people. Anybody in Bahrain knows what the number is, and it's no more than a few thousand at the most. Okay. Now, going to the second point, that in any democratic country, when the people are obstructing justice and blocking the square, blocking the highways and the motorways and closing businesses down, if you look at the UK, UK itself, which everybody portrays as a great democracy,
Ali,
remember the student.
Ali, are you serious?
In the UK,
Ali, are you serious that in any democratic country, I'm quoting you, that if someone is blocking the highways, hundreds of people get shot by live ammunition? Are you having a laugh? Has somebody put you up or what?
No, no, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that the police have the right to protect the people of the country.
Oh, well, there we have it. There we have it from Ali. There we have it from Ali in Bahrain. The police have a right to fire live rounds, kill and wound hundreds of people. Not my statistics, the BBC's statistics. Hundreds of people either killed or wounded because they were blocking the highways. That's Ali's idea of a democratic country. But we have another call from Bahrain. This one is from Noor. Let's hope there's more light than heat in this conversation. Noor, welcome to the show.
Hello, George. How are you?
Very well. Nice to hear from you.
Okay, this is Noor. I'm a Bahraini citizen.
Yep.
And this is my first time to call somewhere and call. I'm really scared to talk to TV.
Just take your time.
Yeah. So I just wanted to express my pain and sorrow towards what happened today in my country. What happened today was a total torture, murder. I repeat, it was a murder. It was a total peaceful protest. I was there yesterday the whole day. And just replying to Ali, it was both Sunnis and Shias. My friends are Sunni people. And they were sharing all yesterday, all what we want. What we wanted is just a peaceful protest, and that's it. What happened today was unacceptable. We were just protesting yesterday in a peaceful, civilized way. But the army, just the fact that the army is facing the citizens while we're just protesting, and we're wanting our rights in a peaceful way, is just unacceptable. Really unacceptable. I'm really in pain. I'm really in pain. I was just in Salmania Hospital before a while, and I'm seeing how people are suffering. They are in pain. This is my country. I'm a Shia, and this is my country. But we are both Shias and Sunnis. We are one hand. We are all the citizens of Bahrain. I'm a 23-year-old person, and I don't have a job. I'm married. I don't have a house. Just because these naturalized people are coming here, having our Bahraini nationalities and sharing all... every priority with us, everything we need, they are sharing it.
Well, look, Noor, I think the whole audience around the whole world has heard your message from Bahrain this evening. As far as I'm concerned, it is the voice of the majority of people in Bahrain. The blood that was shed in Bahrain today was Muslim blood. Whether it was Sunni or Shi'i is completely immaterial. It was Muslim blood. It was Bahraini blood. And it was shed by the military forces of a royal dictatorship, which has become a legend, a byword, over decades for torture and for killing. I made speeches about it in Parliament well over 10 years ago, and I'll be continuing to speak out. God willing, I'll see you next week at the same time, same place.
Hello, just comment your name and location with that number. And just make sure that your television volume is set up to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You can read it directly.